Hi, everyone. Happy Sunday. Goodbye, Lori. Len, I couldn't hear you when you had the mic. I'm assuming you turned it over to me, but I couldn't hear. So hopefully I didn't take it away from you. I'm here for the Seven Steps teaching. And what I would like to do before I start the Seven Steps teaching is just play a song. And the song I'm going to play, well, I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of when, you know how sometimes we get the feeling that we've somehow failed, you know, like you know, maybe we lost our temper, maybe we haven't meditated in a few days, maybe we, you know, just totally forgot truth and got fully pulled into the world in some way, you know, something like that. And sometimes we judge ourselves for that. And what I hear in this song is, instead of a judgment when this person says she fell down, instead of a judgment, what I hear is just her kind of saying, you know, now I want to return to my heart. Now I just want to remember what I really want. And I think it's a very, very nice song. The name of the song is Everywhere, and it's by Lucy Wainwright Roach.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Speak a little louder, I'll even shout. You know that I'm proud and I can't get the words out. Oh, I want to be with you everywhere. Oh, I want to be with you everywhere. Something's happening to me. My friends say I'm acting peculiarly. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere.
Sweet song. Yeah, she has a sweet voice too, I think. Lucy Wainwright Roach, R-O-C-H-E, Everywhere. Yeah, it's a very sweet song. All right, so as I mentioned, we're here for Seven Steps to Awakening, and we are going to start at number 595, and I just put a link in the room for you. If you happen to be listening on the radio, if you want to follow along in the journal, you just go to the website, which is rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And in that website name, the 7 is the digit. It's not spelled out. So rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And after you get to the website, you can just click on step 3 up on the menu bar and then click on the numbering sequence that's going to allow you to find your way to 595, which is where we're beginning. And I am going to read first from the Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 595. This is actually quoting Nisargadatta Maharaj. And the quote is, "The only radical solution is to dissolve the separate sense of I am such and such person once and for good." And I am such and such person is pretty much hyphenated in this quote. So that's really all one, almost one word. There's a little bit of spacing there, but it is also in quotes. So it's, you know, it's that one thought. I am, you know, in my case, of course, I am Regina, right? I am such and such person. And I love how he starts off by saying this is really the only radical solution. One thing that's interesting, if you really pay attention to your thinking, whatever the heck your thinking is, if you pay attention for just a little bit, you'll notice if there was no I, then there really couldn't be most of those thoughts, because most of the thoughts that the mind shares with us are thoughts about me or how the world relates to me. So, you know, this morning when we were listening to Lynn's teaching, you know, what's Lynn's teaching? How does that relate to me? And hopefully, you know, we were hearing that in the accept the atonement for yourself kind of way, but we could imagine that, you know, Lynn, we could imagine with our guilt, we could imagine, you know, Lynn was talking about me. She thinks I'm a spiritual snob, you know, the ego, that me, really, when it looks at anything, it interprets everything in relation to me. And if it's not related to me, if there's something out there in the news that's not related to me, then I probably don't have much interest in it. It may pass through my awareness very, very quickly because it has no relationship to me. And then things that have a strong relationship to me can get very, very stuck. You know, very, very stuck in my mind. If there wasn't this me there in the first place, if there wasn't this I there in the first place, then all of those thoughts, you could say, would have no foundation. And literally, they would just disappear. Because without the me, there's no cause for the thoughts. And one moment, I just need to let Jamie in.
I'm coming. Here I am. You didn't think I forgot about you, did you?
All right, so let me read Nisargadatta Maharaj's quote again. It says, "The only radical solution is to dissolve the separate sense of I am such and such person once and for good." And again, I just have to say it again because I love it so much. I love that he calls it the radical solution. Because if there's no thought of me, all of those other thoughts have no basis. So let's look and see what I wrote in the journal. I am a person. That is, of course, an idea. It's in quotes in the journal. So it's presented as an idea. I am a person protects the ideas. I am a body and mind is a self. I am a happy person is no different. When one knows the nature of ego, one also knows permanent happiness cannot come from it. The nature of its beliefs eventually result in unhappiness. Therefore, time is better spent letting go of the ego idea, I am a person. Take aim at the triad of beliefs that support the ego as real. Fire the light of clarity on them. be free of the belief in self. Then one shall know what freedom and unlimited happiness are. Well, again, what we're looking at when we look at the journal, we're actually looking at my journal. And so everything that was written here, some of it may still be perfect for me today, and some of it may kind of talk to a phase I was in at the time that maybe by now I have transcended. It kind of varies. I see both in the journal. I think this kind of talks to a phase that I was in then that I think now has been transcended. And that was the idea, I am a happy person. Hey. Right now, of course, I'm happy. But I don't feel like I am a happy person. I feel like happiness is natural. That's what I feel like. Like happiness is, just like isness is. Happiness is. And if there's nothing going on that blocks what's natural, then what's natural is going to be apparent. And so that's the way I would describe happiness now, is that happiness is, rather than I am a happy person. So that idea has kind of changed for me. In fact, when I was in St. Louis this week, doing some teaching there, I did 2 3-day workshops. And obviously one of the thoughts we were trying to put a crack in is the idea, I'm a person. And when I noticed, of course, how some people were really holding to that idea without even noticing they were holding to the idea, I called it the butts. You know, we had, it felt like half a day of teaching and then 2.5 days of butts. but, which we addressed each one as it came up. But, as we were looking at the butts, you know, what was happening a lot was just this strong idea that I'm a person. That was the primary but. You know, here's who I am, and here's who the world is in relationship to me, and what about this situation? When again, if the idea I'm a person wasn't there, the entire relationship wouldn't have existed, and so there wouldn't have been a question. So as I felt like, you know, I was readdressing over and over again, you know, the reminder, but you're not a person, you know, you're not a person, and re-reminding that over and over again, what occurred to me was that I don't really think of myself as a person like I used to. I never really paid attention to it. So it didn't occur to me until I was working with that belief. And I think what's kind of happened in my mind, the shift that's taken place in my mind, is that if you were to ask me, you know, what I am, and ask me to define that, if I knew you were talking about the personality rather than the truth, you know, if I knew that that's really somehow what your eyes were on, you were at the personality and you wanted to know what the personality was, what I would have to describe the personality as now is a process. You know, it's always changing. You know, it's changed from, you know, the time I was born up until now, and I'm sure the personality will continue to change. So the personality is a process, and it appears in whatever way it appears now. But, you know, next week, next month, next year, another time, it can show up differently. So what's happened for me is that the idea I'm a person has softened. To where there's still an I, that I is more of a watcher, and the personality is the primary form that this watcher sees. But to say that I am the personality or I am the person, it doesn't feel exactly true anymore because, again, the I the watcher, the eye is constant and the personality changes. And what happens when this occurs is that we can disregard our thoughts a whole lot more easily. You know, as soon as the thought process is seen, it can be disregarded because, well, it has no meaning. It has no meaning. Thoughts then that way then seem to have a more temporary nature. You know, like before, as I was talking about, a thought could get stuck. A thought could get stuck because it had the foundation of a me. And so it could get stuck. And in fact, it can get stuck for nearly a lifetime. I mean, certainly, you know, there are stories that people can tell. You know, people can be in their 50s and 60s and be telling a story about something that happened to them when they were 5 as if that story still has meaning for them. It's still a part of who they are. It's still a part of the person. And so when we have the idea that I'm a person, then thoughts can get stuck and they can seem to last for a really long time. They can seem to matter for a really long time. But if we start to see ourselves more as the watcher, and I like to talk about, you know, the watcher is watching a 4D movie. You know, we have the 3D apparent outer world, right? We have the 3D outer world, but then there's a fourth dimension, which is the inner world, the thoughts, the emotions of the personality that we're each watching. It's like we each have a front row seat to a different personality in this 4D movie. And so the fourth dimension that we're watching is this person. But again, that's still just part of the movie. It's still part of the changing nature. And what's constant is the watcher. There's no way that I can be anything that changes. There's no way that I can be the personality that changes. And so as we get clear on the idea that that's impossible to be the person and that the only thing we can be is this watcher, well, then again, you know, the foundation that allows thoughts to get stuck, that foundation has now crumbled. And so the 4D movie continues. But then it's just this movie with these temporary things moving through. Nothing getting stuck. Or if they do get stuck, they get stuck for a very temporary basis until we wake up again to who we are, which we do. Once we have that clarity, we can maybe forget for a little bit, but then we wake up again to who we are, and then instantly it's unstuck and it moves on and it's forgotten. Also, when I was in St. Louis, I was telling one of the groups that I don't remember the past like I used to. That doesn't mean I don't remember the past. In a way, I don't remember the past at all. I'll try and explain this. I'll try my best to explain this. But first of all, let me talk about the way I used to remember the past. I used to remember the past as if it was something very real, very concrete, very solid. And now the level at which I remember the past, if I remember it at all, many things I don't remember at all, but if I do remember it, I remember the past like an intellectual story. Rather than having this concrete picture memory of the past, I remember it like an intellectual story. And so I can say, you know, like I can say, okay, I was at Stanley Hotel Friday night. And I remember that, but I don't really, not like I used to remember things. Now, it's more like I just intellectually know I was there. The only thing that really seems real for me now is whatever's happening right now. There's also not a projection of the future like there used to be. There's an awareness of the future. I mean, I have appointments on my calendar. You know, like I know that tomorrow morning I'm going to be teaching a class, and I even know that over Thanksgiving week, we're taking a trip to Arizona. But once upon a time, I was very into that future. I was really imagining the details of the future. You know, before I'd go on a trip, I'd imagine what was going to happen on that trip. I'd even imagine how I was going to feel about things. I would imagine how the other people with me were going to feel about it. And now, you know, if a trip needs to be planned, the trip is planned, but then it's just kind of left. And once the planning is done, and by planning, I mean, you know, booking tickets, booking motels, whatever. But once the planning is done, then it's just kind of left alone. And so there's an intellectual awareness that it's out there, but there's not this picture of it in my mind anymore. And then when it arrives, you know, it's funny because people always ask, oh, was it what you expected? And I can never really answer that question because I didn't really have an expectation. I can say certain things surprised me, like, oh, well, you know, I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect this because I know that was a surprise. So, but I can't really say what I expected because I didn't have the picture anymore. In order for the past to stand up, and for the future to stand up, there has to be a solid me to be in relationship with the past and with the future. And if that me is not solid, that personality me is not solid, then it can't form a relationship with the past. It can't form a relationship with the future. And so they don't have a real existence. They might have an intellectual existence. You know, like I said, there's a, yeah, I know I was there, or yeah, I know I'm going there. But they don't have that solid existence they used to seem to have. This morning when we were in gathering, somebody said something about time. Something about, you know, we talk about how there's no time, but yet we're also focused on the clock. Well, actually, I don't think time has anything to do with the clock, which I know sounds a little crazy maybe in the beginning. You know, like right now I'm looking at the clock in front of me and here in Pueblo, it's 5:23 p.m. That's not what time is. Time is not that number. Time is having that solid image, or that solid idea of a past, and that solid image or that solid idea of a future. That's time. And what's interesting is where time comes from. Time comes from having a solid idea of a me. And then a me needs a story. A me needs a past. And a me needs a future. And so all of those solid ideas that extend, you know, seemingly backward and forward and seem to have a lot of meaning and are a part of me, that's time, not 5:23 p.m. 5:23 p.m. is really just a form of communication, a marker, a form of communication. So again, without the idea of a me, a lot of things fall apart. Without a me, there can't be a happy me, there can't be a depressed me, there can't be an anxious me, there can't be a confident me, there can't be a past, there can't be a future. None of these things can exist without the me first. And the me, all we have to do to let go of the me is look carefully. That's all we have to do, because in a way it's the most obvious thing in the world if you look. The most obvious thing in the world is I am constant and the personality shifts and changes. So the personality is just a part of the movie. It couldn't possibly be me because I am always here. You know, I think I've used the example before that, you know, this Regina personality was at one time a child, of course, didn't care about politics at all. Then at another time, she was a Republican. Then at another time, she was a Democrat. Then at another time, again, she lost interest in politics again. You know, I can't define myself by those types of things because I am constant. That's the personality which shifts and change. It's a process. It's a part of the movie. And as I see that, then the idea that I'm a person falls apart. And a lot of other things fall apart with it. So again, I can't say I'm a happy person. First of all, if I did think I was a person and I said that, that would be a lie because the person hasn't always been happy, right? And if I was going to say anything about the person, I would have to say I'm a changing person. Anything else would be a lie. I can't say I'm a depressed person. I'm a happy person. I'm a smart person. I'm a dumb person. Heck, I've been smart at times. I've been dumb at other times. You know, so if I'm going to define myself by the personality, the only true thing I can say then is I'm a changing person. Then maybe I can hold on to the idea. But once I start to realize that, once I start to look more carefully and realize that I am actually the constant watcher, well, then even that final idea, I'm the changing person, would have to fall away. But heck, that's the only way, if I was going to define the person, that's the only honest way of defining it. It changes. So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj says, the only radical solution is to dissolve the separate sense of, I am such and such person, once and for good. I've been told, you know, we talked a little bit about spiritual arrogance this morning, or I've already forgotten the word that Lynn used, spiritual snobbery. That was it, spiritual snobbery. It was basically the idea of thinking that we're special because we're spiritual. We talked about that this morning. And of course, one of the ideas that sometimes, you know, we do on the spiritual path is sometimes we change our name from the birth name that we had to another name, a spiritual name. And I think the real idea behind that is that when we drop the name and we take on the new name, the idea is not to take on any ideas along with the new name, so that we really remain not the person. We really remain undefined. We really remain just the watcher. And certainly a lot of spiritual masters have completely dropped their name, and often they aren't even the ones that renamed them. Other people renamed them because the other people wanted to call them or identify them as something, right? So a name was given. But I think one thing that often happens as a part of the spiritual path is that we change the name and then we take on a new identity with the new name, right? A new spiritual identity. And now I'm a spiritual person. But again, if you look at that very carefully, probably for every one of us, the idea that I'm a spiritual person can't possibly be a true definition because we didn't think that when we were two, did we? When you were 2 years old, did you think I'm a spiritual person? No, so it can't be who we are. So, you know, all of these ideas that we have that define who we are, they're all really just mistakes. Who we are is that constant awareness, that constant watcher. All of these ideas about who we are shift and change. They're just a part of the inner movie. They have nothing to do with who or what we are at all. And again, as soon as we see that, then they just pass right on through. Even if the thought, I'm a spiritual person, shows up, it doesn't cling and it just moves right on through. It's just a passing thought. It doesn't actually become a part of an identity if there's not a me who's looking for an identity. You know, A Course in Miracles says something in it somewhere. I'm not much of an expert on the Course as far as being able to quote it perfectly. But I do remember its main themes. And you know, it's in there it talks about how, you know, the ego question, who am I, is an error. And that's because the ego is always trying to build that identity. Who am I? I'm a spiritual person. You know, who am I? I'm a loving person. Who am I? I'm a, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. And all of that is just trying to hold the idea I'm a person in place, which is actually, that's what the ego is, by the way. The ego is the idea I'm a person. And so all of these ideas that we currently define ourselves with, or that we've defined ourselves with in the past, or that we may define ourselves with in the future, they're all just a part of the ego. So again, the best thing to do is just to really notice. I mean, you can notice how what you are never changes. The inner movie may change a lot, but what you are never changes. The way I first started playing with this is when there was a lot more emotion, you know, moving through this body. And so I would start to notice that when I was happy, you know, what is it that sees the happiness? And then I would start to notice when I'm frustrated, what is it that sees the frustration? And is it any different than when I was happy? Is there any difference at all? I started paying attention to when I was healthy. What is it that is aware of this body's health? And what about when I'm sick, when the body isn't healthy? That which is aware of the body's sickness, has it changed at all? You know, and I became very, very aware of the real I prior to the thought I, but the real I that's always the same, even as both the outer and the inner movie shift and change. And as I came to see that's what I am, then I knew that the personality was nothing but a process. By a process, I mean it changes. It just changes. So again, Nisargadatta says, the only radical solution is to dissolve the separate sense of I am such and such person once and for good. Dissolve the separate sense of I am such and such person once and for good. And of course, I'm saying we just have to look and pay attention, and we see that that couldn't possibly be true because we're constant and the personality isn't. In the journal, I wrote, I am a person protects the idea I am a body and mind is a self. When I think I'm a person, I also think I'm a body. When I think I'm a person, I also think my thoughts are what I am. So I think the mind is a self, right? So if I'm holding on to the idea I'm a person, I'm also going to hold on to the idea I'm a body and the mind is a self. They go together. They're like a triad. A three-legged stool that holds up the ego, holds up the separate sense of self. Of course, you guys know what happens to a three-legged stool if you cut off one of its legs. It comes crashing down. And so if I can see that I'm not a person, if I can see that the personality is a process, I cut off one of the legs of the three-legged ego stool, and the stool comes crashing down. I am a person protects the ideas. I am a body and mind is a self. I am a happy person is no different. Again, that was just a current definition. When one knows the nature of ego, one also knows permanent happiness cannot come from it. The nature of its beliefs eventually result in unhappiness. This was really me looking at the idea I'm a happy person. You know, maybe up until this moment, I wasn't even conscious of the idea I'm a happy person. But as I began to contemplate this quote by Nisargadatta Maharaj, I became conscious of the idea I'm a happy person. And once we become conscious of something, we can question it. We can't question it when we aren't aware of it. We just live with it. We just live as it, right? But when we become aware of it, we can begin to question it. So what's happening in the second part of this journal entry is I'm now looking at it, saying, wait a minute. You know, can a happy person be constant? Of course not. You know, the nature of the ego is that it can't be perfectly happy. There cannot be a happy ego permanently. It's only happy when everything seems to be going its way, meeting its ideas of good. But as soon as something comes up that touches its ideas of bad, the idea of happiness is lost. So how could I be a happy person? There's no such thing as a happy person because, again, the personality changes. There's no such thing. The only thing that we could say if we're going to say I'm a person is that I'm a changing person. That's it. We couldn't go any further than that and be telling the truth. Otherwise, we really are just deluding ourselves. So that's what I'm looking at here. I'm looking and noticing that this thought that I had couldn't possibly be true. When one knows the nature of ego, one also knows permanent happiness cannot come from it. The nature of its beliefs, good and bad, eventually result in unhappiness because things can't always meet up to my criteria of good, right? They just can't because the world keeps changing. Therefore, time is better spent letting go of the idea I am a person. Now, we talked about time a minute ago. What does the word time mean in this sentence? Therefore, time is better spent letting go of the idea I am a person. In that sentence, really, time is synonymous with now. Right? Now. Instead of doing something else with now, the best thing that I can do is let go of the idea that I'm a person. And of course, the best way to let go of the idea that I'm a person is, again, to keep looking. Like I said, questioning this I, this self that's here now, this watcher that's here now while I'm cold. Is it any different than the watcher that was present when I was hot? This watcher that's here now while I'm hungry. Is it any different than the watcher that was here when I felt like I ate too much? You know, just notice, just keep watching and noticing the constant self that's always here. The self that's closer than the breath. And by paying attention to that, really paying attention to that, the idea that I'm anything but that self begins to fall away. That's the best way to spend now. Whether that now is called 5:23 p.m., 5:38 p.m., 2 a.m., 7 a.m., it doesn't matter. It's the best way to always spend now. Therefore, time is better spent letting go of the idea I am a person. Take aim at the triad of beliefs that support the ego as real. Again, the three-legged stool that's holding up the separate sense of self. Take aim at that. Fire the light of clarity on them. Notice that it cannot be true. Notice what I really am. Notice what must be true. Be free of the belief in self. Then one shall know what freedom and unlimited happiness are. And as I mentioned, happiness just is. It doesn't require claiming. I'm going to scroll down and click on 596. And I'm going to read 596. Oh boy, this is a long one. That's me being sarcastic. It's very short. Here's quote number 596, which comes from Nisargadatta Maharaj. The mind is a cheat, he says. How's that for a direct statement? The mind is a cheat. So I guess the question becomes, what is it cheating us of? If the mind is a cheat, what is it cheating us of? And of course, the answer would be the awareness of our natural self. You know, the happiness that is, the joy that is, the love that is, the compassion that is, the humility that is, the natural state. Mind cheats us of that if we listen to it and believe its stories, because then we start having a different experience of who we are. And so we don't know our natural self. Let's see what I wrote in the journal after contemplating that. So number 596 says, mind narrows experience to something so small and limited truth cannot even begin to touch its imagination. Let go of mind. Stay with devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. Do not give up. Do not grow tired of this effort. Be more committed to the task of shedding limits by eliminating one's attraction to mind. Attention does have an addiction to mind. We can each direct our attention. You know, like if I ask you right now to start being aware of your toes or the position of your feet, you know, you'll start really, your attention goes right there and you notice your toes or the position of your feet. And then if I ask you to notice the sounds in your environment, I'll be quiet a moment so you can do that. Notice the sounds around you. You know, I hear a quiet little hum from my computer, right? If you're sitting, I ask you to notice what your butt feels like against the chair or on the bed or wherever you're sitting, you can notice that. If I ask you to turn to your head to the left and notice whatever your eyes land on, you can then notice that. I'm looking at an outlet with a gold cord plugged into it and a black cord plugged into it. And all of those things I just mentioned, you know, the sound in the environment, my feet, my butt against the chair, the plug, they were all things I wasn't aware of, you know, before I started playing this little game. And that's because we can direct attention. We can put attention anywhere we choose to put it. And attention puts something in our awareness. Attention reminds me of a flashlight. It's like a flashlight, and you shine the beam of awareness on something, and then you're aware of it. When you aren't shining the beam of awareness, you aren't directly aware of it. I'm not going to say you're not still aware of it. For example, you can have an awareness of the light in the room without being directly aware of it, but then if I say, okay, now pay attention to the light in the room, suddenly you are. So you see, it's not that it's really outside of your awareness entirely, but attention kind of zeroes it in, right? Attention makes it the center of your awareness. That's why I say it's like a flashlight. Whatever attention shines on, that's what you're really aware of. And attention is addicted to thinking. So what happens if our attention isn't somewhere else? It tends to drift to our thinking. And then we just sit there and, you know what it kind of reminds me of? This just occurred to me today. It kind of reminds me of, you know how you see people nowadays, or maybe you do it yourself. You see people playing on their phones all the time. You know, you see people in a restaurant, two or three people around a table, and they're all staring at their phones. Everywhere you go, people are on their phones. Well, to me, the phone is nothing more than kind of a replacement for the thoughts. Like the people who aren't staring at their phone are most likely sitting there staring at their thoughts in the exact same way. You know, they're staring at their thinking. It's the screen. So attention is really addicted to thinking. And that's why this says mind narrows experience to something so small and limited. Like it's like a flashlight beam. It zooms in. So if my thoughts right now are, I need to make something up because obviously I'm not thinking. You know, you can't think and teach at the same time. It's impossible. So let me think for a second. Let's imagine that I'm consumed with which colleges Jasmine's going to apply to and whether she'll get accepted or not and whether how she'll, you know, even if she goes, will she be happy there? And you know how the stories can go on from there. The story goes on from there. If that's where my attention is, on this line of thinking, everything else is out of my awareness because I'm zeroed in on that limited little story. You know, the fact that I happen to be sitting here in a healthy body, which is really, you know, a pretty wonderful thing, not in my awareness when I'm zeroed in on worrying about Jasmine's school choices. Noticing that I'm breathing, which is a really wonderful thing, not in my awareness. Noticing my awareness, that constancy, that isness that always is, not in my awareness. Noticing aliveness is happening now. Noticing the stillness in the world around me. Noticing the beauty of the sky or the soft breeze or the beauty of a flower. All of the stuff is not in my awareness now because I'm zeroed in on worrying about what school Jazz is going to go to. You know, so when we allow attention to get sucked into our thinking, then our experience becomes very, very narrow, whatever that current line of thinking is, and everything else, as wonderful as it is, as freeing and celebratory as it would be if we were aware of it, is completely lost. You know, probably the most magnificent thing of all is just being, just that we be, we is. That's magnificent. My God, that's magnificent. And because our attention is so often sucked into our narrow thoughts, we never even give a moment's attention to the fact that I be, I am, I is. You know, we don't notice the most wonderful thing of all. Mind narrows experience to something so small and limited, truth cannot even begin to touch its imagination. Let go of mind. You know, this really, to me, what this says, when it says let go of mind, it means let go of the habit, of the addiction to being sucked into whatever narrow thoughts are occurring at this moment. That's what let go of mind means. Because, you know, mind really isn't anything but the thoughts that are here now. You know, even my thoughts may be about the past. I may seem to be absorbed in the past. Or my thoughts may be about the future. I may seem to be absorbed in the future. But really, all I'm absorbed in is those narrow thoughts that are in my mind now. They're thoughts about the past or thoughts about the future. But I'm not absorbed in the past or the future. That's impossible. I'm always here. But even the fact that I am here is lost because I'm absorbed in the narrow thoughts that are present now. And they narrow my experience. So let go of mind means let go of being absorbed. Let go of that habit. Let go of that addiction. Let go of having attention so easily sucked into thinking. And start practicing putting attention elsewhere. Start practicing putting attention elsewhere. This is one thing that the Buddhists are really good at, teaching the practice of mindfulness. I love the practice of mindfulness. You know, all the practice of mindfulness really is a practice that helps us break that addiction to thinking. Because I can't pay attention to my food as I'm eating. You know, the texture, the taste, the aroma, and be absorbed in my narrow thoughts too. So if I'm going to eat in a mindful way, I have to learn to break that addiction to being absorbed in thinking so that I can put my attention, my awareness, on the food. You know, if I'm going to do what they call mindful walking, you know, I love to do mindful walking. I love to feel each and every footstep against the ground. It's one of my favorite practices. I love it. But I can't feel as my heel lands and my foot rolls forward and then my toes hit, right? And then that foot lifts up and goes forward again and then my heel lands and then my, you know, the sole rolls forward and then the toes and then I pick it up again. I can't be aware of that lovely, lovely sensation of walking, just foot against the ground if I'm lost in thought. So if I'm doing mindful walking, I'm learning to put my attention somewhere else. I'm breaking that addiction to thinking. You know, and there are so many mindful practices that the Buddhists have, but they're all really doing the same thing. So mind narrows experience to something so small and limited, truth cannot even begin to touch its imagination. Let go of mind. Let go of having attention be sucked into thought now. Let go of that. Practice putting attention somewhere else. Stay with devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. That means we can't just do that once. I can't just once take my attention and put it on, you know, the sound of my breath, the feeling of my breath. I can't just do that once and then, you know, the other many, many hours of the day have my attention sucked back into thinking again. I don't break a habit that way. I need to be vigilant to break a habit, right? I need to, every time I notice my mind has been sucked into thinking again, I need to actively take my attention and place it on something else, something other than those thoughts, whether it's the sounds in the room, whether it's my awareness, whether it's my breath, whether it's a mantra, a thought for the day, just something other than being sucked into that random thinking that happens all the time. Stay with devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. Do not give up. Do not go tired of this effort. Why do we need those kinds of words? Because we're talking about breaking an addiction. No one has ever broken an addiction with a little bit of work. You know, I mean, if we let ourselves grow tired, we will grow tired. And the addiction will win. We all know what addictions are. At some level, we all know what addictions are. And, you know, you have to stick with the practice of breaking the addiction until it's completely broken. We can't grow tired of the effort. We have to want to be free. We have to want to be aware of more than the narrow experience of our thinking. And we have to want that more than the addiction. And then we can put forth the effort, and we can continually put forth the effort, and we can stay with putting forth the effort until the addiction is dead. Until mind no longer attracts our attention without our awareness. Be more committed to the task of shedding limits by eliminating one's attraction to mind. Let me just read again what Nisargadatta said. The quote was, "The mind is a cheat." I've just seen a little bit of him as far as in video and stuff, but for some reason I can just really see him saying this. The mind is a cheat. You know, I imagine him, you know, putting his hands on his lap and like leaning forward with those eyes and looking right at someone and saying, "The mind is a cheat." You know, just really making that point. I can see it so clearly. Of course, it's just imagination. The mind is a cheat. It's cheating us of everything else. It's cheating us of tasting our food. It's cheating us of noticing the feeling of walking. It's cheating us of noticing the gloriousness of being. By keeping us so narrowly focused on chatter, 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 chatter. The mind is a cheat. And so when I read that and then contemplated that, this is what I wrote. Mind narrows experience to something so small and limited, truth cannot even begin to touch its imagination. Let go of mind. Stay with devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. Do not give up. Do not grow tired of this effort. Be more committed to the task of shedding limits by eliminating one's attraction to mind. And what I'd like to do now, instead of going on and teaching the next one, is I'd like to just play a song that I think really emphasizes both of these quotes that we've looked at tonight. The first one, 595, that says the only radical solution is to dissolve the separate sense of I am such and such a person once and for good. And I said the best way to do that is keep noticing that everything else changes and I'm that which is constant. You're going to hear that in this song. And then the other idea that the mind is a cheat, and you know that all these thoughts come and we can get sucked into them, but we don't have to, that's in this song. So it's really a great song. It summarizes both of them. It's a song that I'm sure some of you know. It's by Kirtana. And the name of the song is the train song. So if you can keep your attention with this song instead of having it stray into your own thinking, I think you will love this song. So let's see, it's 4 minutes and 18 seconds. So let's see if we can keep our attention in one place with this song for that long without drifting off into thinking again. Here we go, the train song by Kirtana.
Just because the tracks are laid, or just because your ticket's paid for, and some crazed conductor keeps on calling out your name, you don't need to board the train. You don't need to board the train. Trains of thought will come and go, but you are not your thoughts, you know. So why get all caught up in where they lead? You are who these thoughts are passing through. Don't you see? You are who these thoughts are passing through. Be free. And sad or hurt or unenlightened, you can find a peace that underlies what passes by. Don't mistake the weather for the sky of your being. Why mistake the weather for the sky? Feelings rise and fall away, even those you wish would stay. So why equate your sense of self with mood? You are who emotion passes through. Don't you see? You are who emotion passes through. Be free.
Keep your attention with that song all the way through. I'm sure you heard that everything that was said in this last hour was really summarized beautifully in that song. So that's it. I'm done for tonight. Well, for now, I will be back at 10 p.m. Eastern Time to go over the daily quote with you. So I'll see you in 2 hours. All right. Good night, everyone, for now. Bye.